All right, we are calling to order the January 19th Administrative Control Board meeting for Mountain Regional Water. Do we have any public input tonight?
We do not.
Okay. Do we need to go into executive session?
Yes.
Okay. Do we have a motion to go into executive session?
So moved.
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
All right.
Everybody get their dinner?
Need a motion to go back into session?
Okay. Let's have a motion to go back into.
So moved.
Okay.
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
All right.
All right. All right.
Okay, we're back in regular session. I think Tim has a motion to make.
Right, the next thing is the consideration for the approval of increase to general manager. So I'm going to move that we have an increase to the pay for the general manager, Andy Garland, at the rate of 7% COLA, 6% merit increase over the 2022 amount, effective January 1st, 2023.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you.
It's unanimous. Great job, Andy.
Thank you.
Yes. Amazing job.
Okay, so moving on to the consent agenda. Does anyone have any changes to the meeting minutes?
No.
Does anyone have any questions on the check register?
I'm chewing. Is the $40,000 a year for the legal services a, is that something that we contracted to and we're just following a contractual obligation?
Yeah.
Yes.
It is both legal and human resources. It's probably not okay. Evenly split, but that, agreement runs through, it's got another year or two, I think, on it. It was a multi-year deal.
Okay. The other one is on the Weaver Basin contracts. Now, there's a whole bunch of contracts listed. Can you give me an example of what a single contract addresses? Is it with an individual? Is it with a time frame? What is that?
Do you have the check register? Each water right or source kind of has a contract associated with it, and they're not all priced exactly the same. So Weaver Basin invoices us that way. So,
well, we actually have a written contract with
yes.
them for each other.
Yeah. And then they send us invoicing every year, for those.
Mm-hmm.
So it went up about 3 or 4%. I can't remember exactly, like the annual water charges. So that would be Lost Canyon, for example. And then, Lost Creek, those couple first lines, the transformer line is repaying a debt that we took from Weaver Basin to pay for a transformer. The next two lines are kind of the regionalization charge, if you want to do that. And then as you go down, each of those contract numbers kind of lays out a number of acre feet at a certain price. And that's how we have all our water.
By contract, are we paying this in advance or in arrears? How's that working? Because we're paying it at the end of the year. We pay it for 2023.
Yes, because then I'll take this, create a prepaid, and expense it over all of 2023.
They're all due January 1st.
Okay. And the, I guess, is the number right?
Yeah.
That they were invoicing us?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, it's that big every year.
Because there's a lot of numbers in there, and yeah. They're apparently invoicing you for an amount that they believe that we owe them. And do we check that and say, yes, we agree on that contract. That's the amount that it's owed. Or do they just determine this by some formula? And
you know, they must determine it by some formula. Some of them change. Some of them don't. Like the rate we pay.
But is that laid out in the contract? I mean, could both parties go in there and have access to the information and arrive at the same number? Or are we just taking Weaver Basin's word for the
I think it's kind of like us when we do a rate study and then pass a charge on to our customers, they analyze their rate study and then give us an invoice.
They're like take or pay contracts,
yeah,
and for the exchange rates and everything.
But you know what I'm getting at? It's 1.8 million bucks. Not all of it is the contract stuff, but it's a large number on there. And I was just wondering, do we have a way of coming up with that number?
Weber Basin is 12% of our budget. The cost for the importation and the repayment.
Oh, that?
No, there were two other small charges related to interconnects that we
also paid. It was the Silver Summit Interconnect and then the Trailside Lift Station.
Yeah, that's right. Those were part of the regionalization interconnect. We sat on those for a little bit because we wanted backup documentation. So if there are things that are out
of the generality of my comment is it's a big number. Are we sure it's not 1.6 million or 2.1, or do we have a way of verifying other than the fact that the verification is this is how much they're charging us?
The verification is they send it a year in advance so we can kind of prep, like, this is what we expect to charge you next year for this water. And then they confirm that, send me the actual invoice.
Was there any surprises in the number?
No. And this is, I was actually pleasantly surprised that it didn't go up more, to be honest with you, because it only went up, like I said, like that 2 or 3% from previous years. It kind of.
Okay. And the $200,000 is a fixed charge for 20 years. And then the Davis and Weaver.
I was thinking more of the contract stuff that's in there. Is it, how do you know the numbers right?
Way, I don't know. Contracts are the way they describe it. That's how they describe each water right that we're buying from them, releasing the water releasing from them.
And I would guess we have a schedule of all the contracts that we compare to each year.
I'm sure Steve goes through and makes sure that it the schedule that they provide is the same contract number and amount. And some of them don't change at all.
Yeah.
And isn't the Weaver Basin annual meeting like the end of this month or something? Andy, you sent me something. Weren't they talking about
Weaver River?
Oh, okay. I thought there was another one.
Yeah, that usually in.
They approve different increases. And I think in the past they've done, because the Lost Canyon one is the large increase. And so that can't go more than, I think we've always decided around 3 to 5%. If it's something larger than that, then we're on the phone with them right away. But it's always, we can always expect in the agreements 3 to 5%.
So is it your understanding that this can't get too wildly out of line with what they tell you a year in advance? You don't see, why is it 3% higher?
I'm assuming their costs because like some of them that are like
3% of $1 isn't a whole bunch.
Yeah, but
1.8 million starts to turn into some real.
And that's why I think they send it out early so we can start to prep and make sure we've got the budget for it. I can dig into it more. I mean, it's really become a relationship. They send us in January. This is early in the year, what we think it's going to be for next year. I look at that, start a plan, and then I send the invoice.
I'm only asking the questions because I don't understand how the dollar amount's established. Maybe if I understood that a little better.
Basically, Weber Basin establishes it, and that's how we get our water.
Yeah, it's not a negotiation.
Yeah.
Well, does anyone review the contract? Order your decision, and then don't yell at me, but we don't accept it blindly, do we?
Well, the contracts have been in place for a long time. This is what we kind of have committed to make sure we have the water for our customers. So I don't go back and reread every contract every year. It's just kind of been running contracts that we've been doing every year.
And some of these are probably assumed contracts from other failed water companies.
Yeah. Well, like water, we got some contracts with community water.
Community water, that's true.
So those came on. So we have those contracts, and what they're charging us agrees to what the original base rate was in the contract.
I guess what concerns me is, I trust that you read the contract or whoever, but I don't know if we should just accept the contract blindly. And that's why I asked if Dave looked at it or somebody else.
What we'll do is we will review them and report back at the next meeting.
Okay.
That's fair. It is probably a good idea.
Is it actually a contract or is it like a purchase order or something?
The community water ones were like contract agreements.
Yeah, there are a lot of contracts.
Okay.
And there are legacy contracts as well.
So one we'll review and report back.
Have you ever seen a year where we do this and it's like 3% under?
No. They never go down.
So it doesn't sort of average out over time.
No, because there's some that lock that don't change because probably by contract, and then you know the ones that get a little bit of bump every year.
And for the last couple of years, our surplus water, you know, we've generated revenue on top of just our end users, our connections. So we build up that.
From my standpoint, it's less of a budgetary balance thing. It's more along the lines of when I go to a gas station, I can't tell them what price to sell me right. gas at, right?
But for a gas station, you have more options.
Right.
You only have a single source. But we will review and report back next month.
Not exhausted, though.
Well, just a good exercise. You've got time.
Thanks, Peter. Any other questions on the check register?
No. It's okay.
No, I have a couple.
Okay.
So we had some big Nickerson ones. We had Summit Park Well number 7 and the Lost Canyon spare. One was $25,000 and the Lost Canyon spare was closer to $52,000. So I just wondered if that was something that was budgeted or not.
It was budgeted into last year, and so that was fortunate. We budgeted extra into Lost Canyon last year, if you recall, and that's one of the reasons our expenses for 2023 are going to drop a little bit down there.
Okay.
And the spare is, you know, we've got all those pumps to get the water. They yeah. keep one on hand that's always ready to go in, so then they can refurbish that one, so they're never out a pump.
Okay.
So that was just getting that all lined up. Anything to add?
The spare, you know, is constantly put in and out of other cans. It was cold when that rebuilt. The well 7, you know, it was unexpected, but it was well repaired.
Okay. And then there was a big one for electro power for a membrane pump with, you know, my favorite acronym, VFDS.
We went over that this morning because I knew you'd ask. Variable frequency drive. So we bought new pumps. So the tanks where the water is at the treatment plant, it has to get pumped up with the membranes. We bought the pumps, the submersible pumps. They were about $40,000 each, probably on last month. This was so that the electricity can handle those new pumps and feed all of that to the membranes. So they came up and replaced that, got a new one in there to handle them.
Yeah, the drives for the old pumps were not compatible with the new pumps, and they were original still. So.
Okay. And then I had one other, I noticed there were a lot of builder refunds, and I noticed that a lot of them were for significantly less than what, you know, the $1,500 that they pay. Are we finding builders are getting behind on those, or is that just pretty typical? Do you think, Anna, that they just, you know, kind of let those bills accumulate and take it out of the refund?
If they have a large balance that they haven't really been paying on, we take it out of their security deposit.
Yeah.
Or if we have supplied them parts, we can take it out of their security deposit earlier. Like sometimes they can't find the right wood or the right ring, and sometimes it's just faster and easier for us to repair it so nothing else gets broken.
Okay. We get a lot of them in at this time of year because a lot of them turn them in for the winter, basically.
Yeah.
We'll come and get them up back in the spring.
Well, there's always a mad rush to get into your new house. Like
right. Right. In time for Christmas. Yeah, that's it for me. Any other questions on the check register?
I had a couple. Were there a lot more than average fire hydrant deposits?
Yeah, that's what
we were just talking about.
Was that
about.
More than like normal?
We did buy more fire hydrant meters last year because we had such a high demand from construction to want to be able to hook on hydrants
yep.
and have water on the construction site. So we had more turning back in because we had a lot more out than we okay. historically have.
So it's a function. Thanks. I remember that. More purchase. And then EDM partners, can you remind me their role in the Blackhawk and the Summit Park project? They're the engineers doing the design work.
Yeah, they're one of our civil consultants. They're really good in the waterline space for us in those type Summit Park jobs. So they've been doing the Summit Park work.
Is there like a niche that they fill, like under a certain level, we just farm directly to them or?
So under civil pre-qualified consultants, we have a group of three.
Okay.
And the way the procurement docs are written up is we have to use them on a rotational basis. We try and do that in an intelligent way, you know, benefits the district.
Right on. Okay. Thank you. And then last one was Park City Hospital biometrics. Is that like a new term for drug testing?
No, that's every year. Every year, our employees go in for the health insurance plan and have their biometrics tested. And as long as you pass so many out of that, then your health insurance is discounted more. If you don't pass enough, then you have to pay a little bit.
Okay, and then follow-up question. Some of them are labeled 2021 and some are 2022.
Apparently, they never invoiced us for 2021 and we missed that. So we had to pay 2020. So we kind of caught up this year, 2021 and 2022.
Well done.
Do we know if they're a generally healthy group or?
A lot of people pass, let's say. We have very few who have to pay the extra charge.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a violation of the government. We don't even know around me.
I'm like, how do you know?
Because payroll.
Dave, do we be talking about this?
As long as you're not talking about specific issues.
But yeah, that's what that is. We got a lively crowd tonight.
Yeah. Okay, and then any questions on the two purchase orders? We've got three Ram trucks and the Promontory Sage Hills
better. We need to clarify the trucks.
Yeah. Okay. So Salt Lake City, Dodge, Ram had sent us, like, sign this and we'll get you those trucks. So we signed it, prepared it. They're coming back and saying Ram is not selling the V8s under government contracts this year because they're discounted. They'd rather sell those, it sounds like, at retail to consumers. So they're going to get us a new quote for the with the V6 engine, so a little less powerful. We'll probably move forward depending on what the price is. Because these trucks are going to people who don't really have to tow anything. They're more run around, you know, throw a wrench in the back, a small toolbox, kind of customer service trucks. So the price should be lower. So we'll probably bring a new PO to you next month to sign. Kind of like this one, we'll get them ordered and then have you sign the PO as long as we think it'll still work.
Why Ram? I mean, there's nothing wrong with the Ram. But why Ram?
Because Ford opened up their window for one day and closed it before we could even turn in our request.
No kidding.
Yeah. And
right now, it's about the only thing that's available.
Yeah. So when we went through, these were about the only thing that we could. Ram was the only one still taking orders. And then even now, we've seen that they're not selling the V8s to.
Do you think that 146, 940 is going to go down? Is that what you said?
Yeah. The engine cost should come down.
We hope.
So it's not our choice. They've just said, we don't have any 8s for you.
Yeah.
So we originally were speccing an 8.
Yeah.
With the idea that we were going to possibly tow, maybe.
Well, they're
we
a little.
We decided we don't need to tow because we can't get the 8s.
Kind of. And we'll make sure these trucks go to people who would less likely, like they'll go to customer service people and a couple of those and a person at the treatment plant. And if we need to move some trucks down, but there's some who are more running around, you know, fixing leaks, not towing things.
But do we have the towing trucks?
Yes, we do.
Okay. Next week, we're going to have an overall vehicle discussion about who should have what, what's appropriate. Who gets the new one? Who gets the bike?
So yeah, so we won't have you sign that one tonight because we'll wait for a new price. But the other one is the Promontory Betterment, which we've been discussed about that we've got a final pricing from our part of that betterment of the Sage Hills area.
So and that's just making the pipe bigger.
Might be the pipe bigger, right?
It's allowing us another pathway to get water out of Promontory and then the rest of the distribution system.
Is it a separate pipe or is it just a bigger pipe?
It is a separate, it is a pipe in addition to the distribution line that would serve the neighborhood. And then a control valve in order to get the water out. So it's kind of two pipes to it.
There is a second one that we'll be doing probably later this year in Browns Canyon or Painted, what does Promontory call it? Painted Canyon?
They call it Painted Canyon.
Painted Canyon. That is a line enlargement.
But so that's probably in the same trench.
It's very close. Yeah, it's a step trench, essentially, for most of the alignment for the second water line.
So like a transmission and then a distribution line?
Yeah, essentially. Okay. It's.
Is that how they're split?
Yeah, more or less. The line we requested is specifically for the transmission piece of it.
Doesn't have what connections for
it. No,
just moves water.
Whole water space, Sigma L essentially down into Atkinson and skipped all the pressure relief valves and residential connections and things of that nature.
Perfect.
Great. Do we have a motion to approve the consent agenda?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
That's unanimous. Okay, Kanan, you're on.
All right, so I just, Chris wanted me to give a little update of kind of what's been going on, you know, since I started and all the things we've done. It might not be long-winded, so I'll get you this quick. So I just get started here. So I kind of want to talk about what we've done so far. But the bigger things are we moved off of the Amazon Web Services and gone to the server here in the office. And that's, you know, a lot of people are going cloud, but that's really, it just, it seemed better for us. You know, we're going to have that server. It allows for more control and we can add things, increase, decrease, kind of that, you know, will, you know, and it doesn't cost us anything, you know, to increase because we already have the infrastructure there.
And you also need a computer science master's to figure out the Amazon web server side of stuff. So it takes a whole level of administration now.
Yeah.
But we have the backup. Systems in place.
Yep. Yeah, so, and that includes both our base GIS and our imagery. And actually this year, the, Snyderville Basin GIS Consortium, you know, so, is all people have pulled money that are going to fly imagery at again this year. So we'll get updated. Yeah, 2020 imagery right now. We'll get 2023 imagery sometime next year, probably once it's been done, so that'll be up and we can just put it right on our server and be ready to go.
Is this transferable to the new structure?
Okay.
And so we're going to wire and everything.
Yep.
All right. Thank you.
Who's in that consortium?
It's Snyderville, well, the county, Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation District, us, Park City, rec district is in it. Some water's in it.
No, place. Orgoza?
No, there are not. There's quite a few. There's six or eight of us in
there this year.
Yeah. And Gary Tackman from the sewer district is the one that's kind of spearheading that.
Yeah, and I think they're gonna have some meetings. And just last time I talked to the city, let me know when they were gonna decide on whether to go with more high resolution imagery again, or maybe throw up LiDAR, or just decide. He was said he told me he had to wait for everyone to get the money in so they knew what they had and kind of go forward.
That's one of the check register items you guys typically ask us. Could we get it sometime in October, November? We get the invoice for it every year. They pool the money and then they fly it every 3 years. So
are we sure are we getting the best is possible. Is it powerful enough? And is it a good system?
The collaboration with all of the providers allows us to get that. If we were able to go out on our own, it would be $30,000-$35,000. And we paid $2,500.
Yeah.
Wow. So we just pay a proportional, but because it's all common area, a lot of overlapping. So it is a good deal for us, and as technology improves, the images are getting better.
Right.
Yeah. Yes. There's only a small portion of it they fly specifically for us. That's just out to Lost Canyon.
Yes. Yeah, they do. Yeah, they do specifically add the Lost Canyon transmission line as a request for us, right? And there are other areas, depending on the year, that they spend more time on, depending on requests. Like Park City had a request for some additional data, but we all get to see that. It's not like just Park City sees the stuff they add on, right? It's one big group of imagery that we all benefit from.
Okay. Well, let me just add a follow-up question, and I apologize. What if the system goes down? Does it affect everybody?
The GIS? No, the GIS is just ours.
Okay.
So we subscribe to it, grab it, bring it onto our system. So if the county goes down, it doesn't affect.
So they supply us with files or any
Thanks. Is it governed by an MOU or something like that?
Doug may have signed something years ago.
It's been a collaboration.
Yeah, but it's kind of been more of a collaboration between everybody to cut costs and make a benefit for everyone. I think right now we're down to 6-inch pixels.
So 6-inch, the 6-inch imagery right now.
Yeah, we can pick out valves and fire hydrants.
If it's clear enough, you can see fire hydrants, you can see valves, and some meter bits in the stream, you can see. It's good. That's the kind of the discussion is whether to get that good of imagery again and not have LiDAR or fly LiDAR. That's something that they want to do. I want the LiDAR, mostly because I like to get it to Sam for better elevation data.
That'd be really nice.
Yeah, so we have LiDAR, but it's from 2015.
Not the ton in LiDAR.
Yeah, so LiDAR is a laser distance measuring system. It allows you to create a digital terrain model so that elevation becomes relevant.
Oh, yeah, that would be super helpful.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
you
can
find the hydrants in that too.
Depending on the resolution, they usually do. So there's like ground surface where they remove all the features and give you the base on ground, and then you can extract features.
So in a big snowfall like we have here, as Brian's guys, are they able to go backwards from this? And if they want to find something, it's going to get them down to that 6 inches.
Well, it'll get them to the point where a metal detector will help them find a valve or a hydrant bearing, right?
So kind of on top of that, enterprise sitting on our server, we've also not also set up a data portal. This is just a place where everyone in the district can go to view all the data, maps, apps that they need. It's just all in one central place, posted upstairs, that they can go to the browser and can go on it. And I'll show you some of those apps in a minute. Also have taken our data from what it was before I got here and kind of updated it to a newer data scheme. Really, this is so that once we can go to what Ezra calls the utility network, this will just make that transition easier. And the utility network is where utility industries are going in GIS. It's really its benefits are advanced modeling. We're modeling of connectivity in the network. It doesn't replace what SAM does, but it just allows us to see, do some analysis, and then do things like tracing in the field, in the office. So if there's a leak, the guys can run an isolation trace and find, okay, this valve and this valve are the two you need to shut off. And they can say that, and that can trigger the customer services. Okay, now those two valves are shut off. Let's run a downstream trace and see all the affected customers. And it allows some analysis and also just lots more functionality than we have now.
So like the Everbridge push can be narrowed to just instead of like a tank zone or something, it can be very specific with a lot less button clicks from Anna to get the public notice side of stuff out. So that's kind of one of the immediate benefits of it.
Is there a GIS out there that has, are you developing an underground GIS for where known utilities are?
Beyond hours?
Yeah.
No,
there's not that collaboration.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
So
wouldn't that be nice? Yeah.
Well, I mean, they do it in major cities. I mean, they have companies there that know where everything is underground, and they make that available for a price to when those companies are coming in that are trying to put in fiber optics through, say, a neighborhood, and keep hitting everything.
Well, I'm not going to look into, but I don't know of anybody.
Tell them the information so they won't have those strikes.
Yeah, I mean, I can talk with Aaron and see if he knows what's out there for stuff around here. Cause yeah, I mean, that'd be great to have even just read only access to that stuff just to know where it is and pull it up.
But as we have leaks and everything, we want to start.
Yeah, so that's something I'll show in a second.
We tend to go back.
And if you uncover any other utilities down there, you got to mark those too.
Yes.
There's a downside to having that our water system information out in the public domain.
Probably. Yep.
We'd rather not have that.
One tangential kind of benefit that I see from this is like one of the concerns we've had is about retention of knowledge, like institutional knowledge. And as people retire out, you kind of lose people knowing exactly where each valve is. Like this enables you to like
it's systematically kind of regimented and yeah, it takes that risk out.
Yeah. Brian, we spent a lot of time together this summer.
There could be over the canyon, you're saying it's our vows, not
just the ocean. Fall from back and forth.
Yeah. Gotta do it out before we're doing it.
Matrix him. Well, and another kind of, we were just talking about this today. I don't know if you're going to touch on the fire hydrant side of things, but has been asked several times just in the last week or two with all the new snow. From HOAs and various people, where, you know, where are hydrants? Where can we help clean stuff out? And we were talking today about publishing, hopefully next one for next winter, being able to publish a public facing map with just hydrants on it so people can look and see, oh, there's a hydrant around the corner. I should shovel that out, right?
So we're supposed to clear that, like the neighborhood, the house, or the fire department.
Yes. It's not the fire department. But I mean, everybody's supposed to.
The fire hydrant has been on this winter.
Yeah. I mean, our guys did Summit Park in the last few days. The
last couple of weeks.
Yeah, last couple of weeks, multiple times. Yeah.
With backhoes.
Yeah. Was it Sun Peak? Is that the answer? Yeah. Yeah. Sun Peak did the HOA did theirs. Just that's the one that came to
mind. They were supposed to do it as part of the contract.
And they called and asked for the information, and that was kind of the start of that conversation. But to Mike's comment about not wanting stuff public, the county has asked us for some information, and we, Kate was going to touch on this, but the county has asked us for a while for information in a GIS format, and I was very reluctant to give it to them from, you know, just a carte blanche of our data. So we ended up where we did what their concern was is they wanted, it's part of the franchise agreement stuff with the county we had to sign a few years ago. And for our benefit, giving them that stuff that's within the right of way is a good thing, right? I don't want them to know where tanks and treatment plants and wells and all that stuff are. So Caden went through and cut out all of our water lines that are within public roadways, basically, and gave them that data set. That's all stuff is buried. It's relatively safe. It's within the county. They've told us it's in the engineering department and their GIS department. Same thing. We shared all the fire hydrants with the fire district so that they have those in their data. But beyond that, making the rest of the stuff public is not something I want to do, right?
Do we have any exposure from a legal standpoint?
From what? From sharing? No, and we have any, you know, there's legal obligation if you use the county right of way, you have to indicate and provide that GIS data. They're slow moving for the county because every jurisdiction, every company, everyone who uses the county right of way have their own separate concerns about providing the GIS shape files.
Let me follow that up. Do we have any legal exposure, to any of the fire hydrants if we don't, clear them out?
That's, I mean.
In technically speaking, the property owner upon which the fire hydrant resides is supposed to be the one that makes it accessible.
County right of way?
It, you know, in terms of if it's fully in the county right of way, then I guess Public Works is supposed to clear it, but a lot of them are on people's properties.
We have how many fire hydrants? Did you want that the other day? I can't
remember. 14.
Yeah, because that's on the
1430.
Some of them are 40.
Yeah. I mean, we would need a dedicated crew.
660.
Whatever. And by the time they finish, they'd have to start over again. If that's.
You know, what concerns me a little bit is our exposure just in general. I don't know if that makes sense.
No, it does. And it's something that I've thought about, but I think that really falls back on the property owner or the neighbors. Because the last thing I want to do is do 1,400 fire hydrants and leave 20 undone and something happens. That's why I think it's a deferred responsibility to that, the closest people. It protects them.
Are we
think that's skinny?
We've communicated to people in our newsletter, on our social media. The fire department's communicated with people. And I think I saw somebody else. We want a 3-foot radius.
Park City put some social media out around about it.
Mm-hmm. The biggest exposure the water district would have is if somehow the fire hydrant wasn't charged. And we've had that happen on the east side. You have a fire.
Yeah, that's
fire what district thinking. Comes out, hooks on. The hydrant's not charged. But outside of that, in terms of access to it, generally it's where that property owner is.
Yeah, I'm just trying to limit our exposure.
No, I agree.
We don't need to get sued, but we just don't need to get sued. And that's it could be a lot of money. Yeah. I mean, I'm preaching the choir.
Okay.
Go ahead. Sorry.
You're good.
Really, the other big thing we've done is started the initial CityWorks implementation. That started with our BlueStakes solution. It's been configured. We tested it. It's been implemented. The guys have been using it. I told them to come back to me with any concerns, and we address them as quickly as we can. And I think, Brian, I think it's been going good.
Yeah, no progress so far.
Yeah. There are a few other things. We have blood service line, the EPA rules that came out. So, our GIS provider has a solution that's built based on those rules from the EPA. They just updated it. And it's, so we're getting into that with Chris and Sam and coming up with a plan and moving forward. There's been, like I said, a few other things, and pressure zones, updated those, all well done, pressure zones and private fire hydrants, private fire hydrants will be kind of one of the next things we do in CityWorks, scheduling out those work orders because they have to be done every year. A few other small things, looking at our as-builds, switching utility requests from Sam to me since they want a few of those, but I'll actually look at them here. So here's BlueStakes solution. So this uses CityWorks Respond web app. We'll be using that for a lot of other things, service request work orders, maybe inspections. And so it was a good way to get kind of the guys first introduced. BlueStakes was low hanging fruit. So here's the actual live dashboard. You can see all the time me out here. You can see all the our assets are on the map here. These are our current locate requests. We have a list here of high priority ones, the rest of them, and then we have a list of closed ones. They've currently been 500 since we started this. So.
And one of the things with BlueStakes is we make grab things that are not within our service area. So they just have to go through and eliminate those. But at least this keeps track of when things were addressed, the date they responded to and things like that. Build a history.
So yeah, I think it's been going good. We configured it how they want it.
I've been a few minor tweaks, but the guys seem happy with it. So
this includes Holman Park.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
So this system you have here, we're talking about Park City and Summit Water and, I guess not Gorgoza, but do they have something very similar to this? I mean, would they be pulling up a screen that's got stuff on it too because you've been coordinating?
Gorgoza doesn't have a...
What about Summit?
An active... Summit does. Their product is different.
So they're using a different...
Software, but yeah, the similar stuff.
These are, that's right.
Mm-hmm. But the work order stuff, they use a different model.
This is our desktop viewer. I'll show it in a second, but we have that. I don't know if you guys did show that old annexation app. It replaces that. This is kind of where anyone here, can log in to GIS and go in and look at data on network, on with a parcel data, we'll get customer data in there, and it's added some other functionality that we can have. So here's the live view of it. Things like, notes that Ryan or somebody can go in and can say, hey, something's missing from the map. That goes into a dashboard or an app that I can look at to stay up to date on things, you know, that they know we're missing that I may not know about.
So in this particular area, is some in that jurisdiction mm-hmm. also?
Yep.
And so that used to be part Community Water, mm-hmm. part Mountain Regional, part Summit mm-hmm. in that area.
Yep.
Do you have a way of seeing the other data?
We have asked Summit for the GIS data, just their underlying stuff, and they weren't willing to share at the time. Likewise, I don't know if we'd be willing to share all of ours with them. So yeah. it was worth the ask at the time. So.
And Ian, this kind of goes back to your request a couple of months ago of where things are. Mm-hmm. There's just different layers.
Yep.
That we can extract.
Does this take into consideration growth?
No, this is existing.
Just existing.
One of the things we're working on is to help with inspections for new construction.
This doesn't have the workforce housing on it on that aerial view, right?
Yes. This is the 2020 integration.
In some ways, Joel, it does because it can let someone know where they can connect. It outlines where lines are.
It's like it's got parcels in there.
It does. Yeah. So the orange parcels are parcels that have been annexed into the district, which is something that the front office staff uses on a fairly regular basis. If somebody calls and asks that they're annexed.
There's lines there in the Canyons parking lot. Looks like some sort of division of something there.
Yeah, there's parcels in there. The gray lines are the underlying Lower Village subdivision plat, but they're not part of. They are not part of the non-regional district.
The thing that concerns me, maybe sort of, is the growth. I mean, it's ridiculous. I don't care if you're talking Kilmore Junction, if you're talking about Silver Creek. Have we thought this through? That we have growth coming. I mean, we're not sitting still here. It's ridiculous.
No, we're not. We're not sitting still, and that's why we're replacing the tank in Summit Park to deal with discovery. We're looking at replacing the failed tank of the Community Water that came down a couple of years ago. You know, conservation is huge. Making sure we have adequate water supply. We can't be fooled by the amount of snow that's out there right now. This could be a one-time anomaly. We're not going to get another 20 years. So don't be surprised if we have drought restrictions this summer. So we are thinking about that all the time.
Yeah, I have some other questions, but I'll hold off.
Yep.
They relate to the snowfall.
Sure.
This also, I mean, allows from a planning perspective for growth. It allows us, if somebody contacts us and they want to see how close our infrastructure is to their project. This is a way that we can provide them with a snapshot, right? So not directly planning for growth, but a tool
right.
in that respect. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
When we go to the utility network, we will be able to use some of that. We can say, if we build this, and how does it affect other parts of the system based on the, you know, connectivity and the flow and all of that. So
yeah, the utility network is kind of part water model. And so it takes some of the software that Sam has and does some, not to the full extent of the stuff that his software does, but some rudimentary stuff, and it will allow to be able to place demands on a certain spot to, you know, more detail with what Caden was saying. You can put demands on a certain spot and say, if we build a subdivision that has 100 ERCs on this spot, what does it do to the rest of the system? What flow impacts do our existing customers have? What shortfalls are there? So from that perspective, this will allow us to do that kind of planning.
Yeah, so we'll be able to see, because the utility network is all based on connectivity. We'll have everything connected up. We'll have all this pressure networks modeled in there. And, you know, we'll be able to do, you know, how many customers are on each pressure network and all sorts of, like, different things that just we don't have.
So what's your biggest cost benefit success so far with this? It's only going to get better over time, right? You got to invest up front. And it's going to pay some unknown dividend down the line. But what have you seen so far that you're pretty excited about?
Short term, just the guys being able to see stuff on an iPad, walk out and be like you were asking how close they could get to mm-hmm. in the snow, get to an asset, a fire hydrant or a valve where they can, you know, they can literally walk with an iPad with location services turned on and it'll get them to that asset and be able to find it much quicker than, you know, not necessarily buried, not necessarily buried line. I'm talking about this
like path. A beep. Huh?
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Yeah. So in conjunction with that desktop viewer, there is a mobile viewer that's basically the same thing. It's inside an app on an iPad or we just have that's on an iPad. Called Field Maps, and this will allow the guys in the field to view all our assets the exact same way, just on a mobile device. So you can't really tell on the screen, but the symbols and stuff are bigger, so they're easy to see on a. But what this also will give us is the ability for the guys to collect data. So similar to the map nodes that were in the desktop view, where the guys in the field will be able to add, map change requests. To me, to make sure that I can go out and I have some out here.
So is that cell tower or satellite?
It's both.
Both?
So it's getting GPS corrections over a cellular modem, because the GPS will only get you so close. And we pay an annual subscription to the state for a correction service. Yes. Yeah, so it gets us down to that far.
So we have two GPS receivers. One we're going to start deploying here hopefully very soon to the guys to help collect leak data. So when they're out on a leak, they can GP because the pipe's exposed. They'll get they'll get an accurate location.
Yeah. Pipe blast.
Yeah. And then they'll be able to collect some other, you look at this test point I collected here,
So we had a leak
in our other stuff
2 weeks ago and they were going on a piece of paper. Right. So this hopefully will improve our odds
yes.
by being able to pull in more accurate data.
Yeah. But, and so there's
y'all got to get input somehow.
Yeah. The big push is, is to every little bit that they can collect out there is going to help. And we can find other ways.
But if we can go in there and find out what the pressure is on a specific hydrant, the last time a valve's been exercised, the last service at a home, is it a constant issue? Is it, and then hopefully build a capital plan around replacing, improving, and things like that. That's the end goal. And then we have fun dashboards that Brian will talk about in a little
bit. Yeah, so Brian talked about this list of leaks. This has just been updated with the 2022 data. Eventually, this will become historical data as we get leak data into CityWorks. We'll probably get a more, near real-time feed into work orders and other things. This is kind of a snapshot of the lead service line inventory. It's like I said, it's based directly on the spreadsheet that the EPA put out. We'll be able to just export it. Once we get all the data, we'll export on the dashboard and it'll come out and we'll plug it in and it'll be good to go. But like I said, Chris, myself, and Sam, I'm meeting.
How much exposure do we have on lead line in the district? Summit Park and Silver Springs, Spring Creek. It's kind of the ones that we can identify based on age of the subdivision, basically.
Right? Yeah, so the Utah is cut off of 1990 when they were, right?
Yeah, from a records perspective.
Yeah, so we have county data to start with, and the Duke County has, the customer data, the county data, and that they had, a lot of their data had year built, so if the structure was built after 1990, we can just assume that's not like nobody's not.
But yeah, we have to build a inventory in a justifiable way, but actually finding a lead service line, I'd say it would be unlikely in the district. It's pre-World War II is kind of when there were the most common.
So there probably isn't much.
I'd be surprised if there's
there's any district.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, this solution is helping us, come up with, it has other pieces where we can collect data from, because you have to be both utility side and customer side. There's a piece we can put out to the public saying, hey, can we verify this for us? Things on the sort of base and photos and things like that. There's also a field component. If we have to go out and using that same app as before, Field Maps, we can go out if we have to go out and actually, get in duplicates and do it. There's a component to that as well.
So Sam, do you use information from this?
Yeah.
Analysis?
This is a great tool for us to tackle this, EPA mandated inventory we have to build and really regimented.
It's probably part of that double-edged sword that you get all this information and we gather it, and at some point we got to start using it to do some analysis, because the problem is that you had the information right? Someone can say, look, you had all this information. Your focus is on gathering data, but someone's got to analyze it to make sure that we're compliant with code and that type of stuff. So it's got to follow behind us at some point.
Yeah, that's a good comment. And actually, you know, Caden's voiced something similar in the past where, yeah, we're required to build this lateral data set, but it certainly could be useful in the future. So it is going to be an improvement.
Yeah, we don't have a lot of lateral data. You know, we don't have that in our GIS. So it's kind of, you know, we kill two birds with one stone here. We're being forced to make this inventory, so we might as well make the best use of the data, you know, that's looking for unflooded
anyways. And likewise, it's also forcing us to make some changes and additions in Anna's world as well. So it's not just like it's an autonomous thing, but just the GIS. Our customer data is how we get a lot, exporting it from our billing systems, how we get a lot of the stuff into the GIS. And we're finding, you know, contradictions and discrepancies in there. And so that's a lot of QCing of data to begin with and cleanup, which we had to do when we were doing the tank zones for the Bona Collins data mine stuff. And it's painful, right? Because we moved from one billing system to another. The fields were different back then than they are now, right? And then this billing system has morphed over the last 12 years, and there's, you know,
and you may change to a different one.
But you're working hand in hand with Sam on this, or Sam saying, if I just had this information, I could probably do
better
analysis. Yeah, sometimes. So you're the CIA and he's the FBI.
Exactly. Sam will say, yeah, I wonder if we could do this. I'm like, hey, we got that in GIS, or we got most of that in GIS. It came, you know, and that's how the conversation goes. You know, hey, we can get that, or we, you know, there's a way for us to solve data problems, and that's, we do that all the time.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, collecting data is all fun and stuff, but I mean, that's where I'm looking at analysis. Point where just, yeah, that's where, you know, and when we started to collect data on leaks, we'll be able to do things like, you know, what pipe sizes, materials, where are the trends, is it in a certain type of soil, you know, at a certain elevation, we'll be able to do all that. We just got to get the data to get there. And that's, you know, really the next part, you know, we'll make continual improvements to the mobile apps, to the locate solution, to the desktop app. Really, the next few things I want to focus on are these kind of 3 points here. Asset management, which is mostly just finishing the implementation of CityWorks for work orders, service requests, and
getting away from paper.
Yeah, we're right. Moving on, getting them all in there, getting them in a central database that we can mine through all we want, you know. As well as tying those directly to assets in EGIS so that we know this asset has this history of what, you know, this pipe has had, you know, this many weeks we repaired it, this valve, you know, that kind of stuff. That's one of the big pushes. But on top of that, and kind of in conjunction with that, is going to have to be data quality, you know, making sure that all our data is not only geospatially accurate, but has the correct attributes, the attributes we need, that they're filled out, you know, kind of thing. And also coming up with kind of a data management plan. You should always have a data management plan of how data gets into the system, how we take it out, who, you know, how it's used, kind of thing like that. And then implementing automation where possible, where needed, you know, kind of thing. And then integrations. The biggest and the most important one is to get SAM and the water model integrate, you know, get the GIS and the water model talking to each other again, you know, and get the GIS as the system of record so that SAM's water model can just be, you know, do what it's supposed to do. That GIS is meant to be a system of record, whereas, you know, the water model is meant for other things.
And just a backup for that one, just a better explanation. So when Scott started as an intern, we had a rudimentary water model. Scott's big thing was to turn the GIS data that we have at that time into the water model. When he did that, it was a complete separate. The water model was a standalone thing that he created, and then the GIS was its own thing that was, you know, moving along. When we would get updates in the colony and different areas where subdivisions would get added, like he would hand draw them in connection in the model, and it wouldn't be the same as it was in the GIS. So there were two different data sets. And so what we're really trying to do is make it so that there's one master, one place we go to all for all the answers, and then the stuff comes out for different purposes.
Would it be beneficial? I'm not saying it's doable, but would it be beneficial to have someone, a new hire, to
That was him.
Okay. No, but I mean, do we need others? Do we need other people to get this done? I mean, if they work 6 months or...
I mean, like a contract
position? Yeah.
We were talking about, you know, from a field collection standpoint, you know, taking the best use of time, right, is maybe not necessarily in the field. The other person that works with in our department is Mike. Mike has actually worked for me at a former job surveying, so he has field experience, and we were talking about it today that he would actually be a good fit this summer to be able to go out and do field collection stuff.
I guess what I'm getting at is if this is that important, which I think it is, are we moving fast enough to get the information input?
Yes, I think we are because you have to, because of the QC and QA side of stuff, you can't shovel in more stuff than you can deal with. If you get too much data and too many pots, and, you know, too many cooks in the kitchen, you're going to end up with junk.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's one of Andy's and my discussions, and Brian and Ryan have pushed for a while to get this, the equipment for the guys to locate leaks. And my pushback has always been that it's, you know, junk in is junk out. And if they're not collecting good data, it doesn't do us any good.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree.
You know, Andy with his push has gotten us to get another device and you know, we're going to try it and we'll see how it goes. You know, hopefully he proves me wrong and, you know, we have made up with better data.
And I think we've come to a good compromise there. They're not actually editing the data. They'll be collecting the data. They'll be submitting, you know, map change requests. They can still give me that. I can copy the geometry they capture at a high accuracy geometry. It comes to me, I'll put it in the system and make sure it's, you know, that, you know, they don't need to be focused on data entry out there. They can be focused on.
Leaks kind of have a way of revealing themselves, right?
Yeah.
If you're trying to anticipate where the next leak is going to be, are you going to be sending people out with a shovel ready for where the computer says the next leak is going to be?
Yeah, I mean, water surfaces doesn't mean that's where the leak is. And if we can go back and collect better data, since we seem to, and again, Brian's going to show you in a second, if we can get more accurate data of what we're dealing with, it will be huge. Some of our, we found a couple of sewer lines that weren't marked. And there's no way. Well, when you nick them.
How'd you find them?
When you nick them.
Yeah.
And you cannot, there's no valve to shut off the sewer line. So you just hope no one flushes. And it happened.
Wow. Hey, is there any appetite for potentially bringing other data sets that Mount Regional have into the ESMA platform, like water quality data for wells, like as kind of attributes to features that you have?
Yeah. So I would love to get like customer use data, and ingest that in, and any customer data really. And that's one of the other integrations I want to do. Things are like our ADL system, we're kind of leaning into that. The SCADA system, the customer data.
Doug had done some heat maps years ago where customer consumption, right? We want to make that stuff a little simpler to do, not as labor intensive.
Yeah. And if we can get on a, you know, regular cadence of getting that data, you know, I can give them that, I can give them the system. It doesn't have to be a direct, you know, just because someone's got APIs or anything. So it's not going to be like we can, can't just pull the data ourselves. We have to export it out. But, make it any data. I'll take it.
But you have the Badger meters hooked up. I mean, if you have a line out there and all of them have got the Badger meters on them, at any one time, you can see how much water is being pulled out of that line, right? From the meters.
Yeah.
And you have a way of knowing how much water is being pumped into that line, right?
Yep.
And the difference is a leak?
Well, the meter tells you a leak if it's on the customer side, right? And then we do the leak stuff on a slightly different method than that. We know that the idea being that there should be zero usage in the middle of the night, especially during the off season like this, right? So we do that in our SCADA system without having
to. But you're still going to have leaking toilets and stuff like that. It's going to bring some water.
It's noise, right? But if it's leaking toilets on the customer side and Anna's already notified them because we get a notice in our billing system or in, you know, in Badger that there's a customer side leak, but system side leaks, that stuff shows up in our SCADA system.
And yeah, the hope is that it gets data into,
yep,
into CityWorks and GIS, you know, all that real time data. So we can take that and meet it as they have API.
Yeah. So we, I mean, we look at that leak stuff, you know, almost daily right now. I mean, that's how we kind of pin, we can pin down to a tank zone where I think it was the last board meeting, I made a mention of Mike going out and with the listening equipment out, the Grimes guys. And that's how we defined it. We used the SCADA data to come up with, okay, in this tank zone in Summit Park, we have a leak. Now it's down to manpower to say, where in this zone is it? And getting the badger meter data isn't going to narrow that down anymore because it's on our side. It's not on the customer side. Does that answer your question?
Really what the GIS data will do will be able to aggregate spatial trends. We won't be able to pinpoint where a leak is, you know, but we will be able to take that data historically and find if there's any sort of trend spatially, you know, the power is there.
And then help us come up with a capital.
And then, yeah, then it's like, okay, we've identified these pipes, you know, whatever, the, this type of pipe, this size, this year seems to break.
They're about ready to blow.
Where are the rest of them? Maybe we should change those out first. You know, kind of thing. So that's, I mean, that's what I want to get is that, to that, be able to do that kind of analysis. But yeah, that's what I have.
That is really cool stuff. That is, you know.
You like this, don't you?
Yeah.
I love it. You,
I can tell you love it.
Just a side note, so like, great presentation. You usually have a lot of questions and you had a ton. So
I had one on cybersecurity and how, you know, our cyber attack, how do we, you know, to integrate into SCADA? How does that work?
So we currently don't integrate with SCADA. Okay. Like they're not talking to each other.
This is a separate server that lives
so
in.
So the it's not plugged SCADA in. Server is not a plan, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yeah, it's two separate physical servers where our data is our cap because GIS is stuck here upstairs.
And there's
currently there's no.
Yeah, there's absolutely no connection.
Yeah, and we haven't crossed that bridge because we're not there yet, but we will. Because obviously the SCADA is, you know, controls things in the network, so it's going to be, you know, what we put into GIS is going to just have to be a discussion. You know, it'll be.
There are ways to securely do that, though.
Yeah.
So the same, the ETFs are the technology people we use for the network that monitor all the security stuff for us. They're the ones that helped us after the cyber incident, and they're the ones that monitor the network 24/7 for us right now. They are completely capable, and I've talked about it, about being able to link the database from the SCADA stuff. So database only, not control side stuff. Link the database to the GIS and be able to pull data from it.
Yeah, that's what
we had a ransom attack about, I think it was before you were on the board. The problem is that we had Bitcoin and that just gave us this idea.
Right, that'll be an interesting bridge to see if we link them together or not.
Yeah, it'll be SQL database.
Yeah, I mean, it would be a read-only scenario to be able to pull data from the SCADA database.
It would be things like run.
Yeah. Those kids in their basements can figure out things like everything.
Well, if it was only kids in basements, I wouldn't worry about it. But now these are, you know, they're sophisticated, you know, companies. They've got HR departments.
So do we do something annually where we bring someone in that assesses what we're doing, that knows what you guys are talking about and says, okay, there is a firewall there?
So it's interesting. The state, it's probably been 2 months. I had to provide Chris's name, and the state was doing an audit. And I don't think we ever heard anything about
it. A security audit?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cyber security audit.
Were you going in there making some sort of a statement that this is what the system does and prevents, and then they were auditing it to see if that's true?
So they were just reaching out to public entities across the state and wanting to do an inventory of that kind of stuff, incidents and what your procedures are. So
did they do it?
So I gave them ETS's name because ETS, who's Modern Internet System and is in charge of all the software now, they already do those responses as part of the service. Yep.
But it is a big concern. Like, we are vulnerable, just like any other.
And our insurance makes us now also do a yearly audit and fill out a questionnaire. And we'll probably go to ETS now when they do it this year about our cybersecurity system, what, you know, we'll have to go through, fill in all the stuff.
But there are treatment plants, there's chemicals in there, and if too much chemical gets in there, it could be a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So.
Not just at the treatment plant, yeah.
Yeah, so is there something there that's a firewall against, I mean, does somebody have to physically trip a switch in this building here in order to, or is it automatically
change the feed rate
put chemicals into the water?
The SCADA system is an automatic thing. There is a minimum of two-factor authentication to get into the SCADA system to make any changes. I think you asked that question last month. So the guys have to use a remote desktop protocol and various other security features to even get to where the SCADA system is. And then they have to log into the SCADA system again to be able to make any changes.
And the reason I'm asking about another party, because you made it sound like that's almost impossible, but someone else that's spending their entire day trying to make it more possible might think that.
Challenge accepted.
Yeah.
I mean, anything is possible. You can't, I mean, you know, I thought we were secure before, and we are definitely more secure now than we were, you know, a year and a half ago. And the group that we are using is sort of at the forefront of that. We are not their only water system. They do Summit. They do, Snyder Basin water reclamation. We do other entities on the front range, on the front side. So it's, you know, it's not a one-off for them.
And those companies can get hacked. But they're not, they're just doing the audit. They don't have any direct tie back into our system, right?
You mean ETS?
I mean, what happens if that company gets somebody in there? And you think you're dealing with them and you're dealing with somebody else.
That would be no different than having somebody in here doing something nefarious. I mean, yeah.
You know, that's Fight Club everywhere.
Yeah. then it all goes away. Then, you know, then there is no sandbox to play in. Then we go back to manually monitoring tank levels and manually turning on pumps. And I mean, I don't think you can unring the bell. And we're just trying to make the best possible safe decisions that we can. Picking a reputable company that has former Homeland Security ties was part of that choice. And you know, so far, you know, everything that I've seen from them, it's been positive.
The only reason I was involved with this with the automated people mover at LAX, but we had to get some sort of cybersecurity on that thing so someone wouldn't stop it or run it backwards and run into a train. And let's just put it this way. There's over a million attempts to hack that system daily. It was just boggling my mind when I looked at how many times someone was trying to hack a system that was just trying to run the drain. So it's out there.
Yep. No, after the attack and I had more visibility on what was going on our side, I saw it 80, 90 times a day.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and making the changes and changing our security, when I talked to the ETS guys, there's hardly anything anymore. I mean, people still try because it's an IP address, right? They don't necessarily know what it is. They don't know what's behind it. It's the challenge of trying to get in. I mean, you're never going to stop.
You're supposed to ask as the Lord.
I know you
are. We're also supposed to stay on the agenda, and I think we're off topic.
All right. Anything else from Caden?
Thanks,
yeah, that was really a great presentation. Thanks so much.
Have a good well done.
Yes.
Yep. Thank you, wife. Sorry.
All right. So, Sam, what can you tell us about the Laughlin Wells?
Yeah. We just blasted this diesel. You know, we just blasted that Laughlin full study out to everybody without a lot of context. I just wanted to wrap that up and give you guys a quick overview. So here's if you can go down to the figure that's on the next page. Another Caden masterpiece here. So we studied five wells over the past year.
They came out about 2 days afterwards.
Yeah, no, and it came out really nice too. Visually, that's helpful for me to kind of see where these wells lie and then kind of where the large source protection zones are. So over the past year, we've studied these five wells. They're kind of identified for historical water quality concerns, and they also received a lot of scrutiny during our annual concurrency process since I've been with the district. The largest polyline or shape around the outside of the wells is a 15-year groundwater transmission time to the actual wellhead, I guess, without an exception. So that kind of gives you a gut check on what the recharge on these wells looks like, where it's coming from, and that sort of thing. So out of the wells, I'd say the notable ones are Atkinson Well 2, which is the furthest south here, which is a historically very productive well. But kind of due to overuse in that previous life and some water quality issues, it's just a peaking only source for us. And Silver Creek Well 10, which is in the northeast kind of corner of the figure, is another critical well of the district. That's one of the most productive wells in the basin outside of our Bison Bluffs well. So that does a solid, 310 gallons a minute here we go during peak season. So just the main takeaways from our work so far with the study, which have been actionable and really useful, kind of going in two buckets. And one has resulted from our increased lab sampling. So we've reduced the amount or frequency of our data we collect from our groundwater sources, but then we do more analysis on it. So it's more manageable from the workload perspective, and then I think we get better data as a result. And when you look at the wells, over time and look at this increased analysis and kind of the constituents that are making up the greater total dissolved solids group, which is what we're regulated by and what the concurrency program looks at, and there's a couple of interesting things to look at. So for example, Atkinson Well 2, we see is kind of dominated more by the sulfates in the water, is kind of what Bill and his group found there. So that can equate to some issues in the water grain formation and use of the well, because there's sulfates available in the water grain formation. In three of the other wells, a lot of the shift in TDS over time literally looks like it's dominated by the chlorides. And it's Laughlin's opinion that for at least three out of the five of the wells, those chlorides are not native to their respective water grain formations and are likely the result of robe salt or recharge from the surface, you know, robe salt on the Highway 40 and Highway 80 corridors. You can kind of see coming through these source protection zones. So what does that mean for us? The robe salt issue is a challenging one, and we kind of have to attack it through our source protection program. So to me, that's the take home, is really double down on our source protection efforts, and that's something I want to make a priority for the kind of second half of this year. So that's one big takeaway. And the second really useful actionable piece of advice relates to kind of the more mechanical aspects of the well, how they're performing, and their specific capacity would be the nerdy geology trend to throw out there. And I think looking at that over time and us monitoring specific capacity or how much water we can get out of the well given a specific pumping rate, we can make improvements on our operations, make sure that everything's running smoothly, and even do some more intense rehabilitation where it's necessary. So overall, I think it was a good effort. We got some really good information back from the Laughlin folks that we weren't able to, or I wasn't able to identify in-house. And I think we can make some improvements, not only these five wells, but, you know, deploy that globally throughout the distribution system to the 16 plus wells in the district. So happy to collect any comments folks might have. We're going to turn that around to the Laughlin folks.
And Sam in his packet also included the letter that he sent out a year ago
as part of the source protection. It's not something that we're waiting for this to send out letters to people that have pesticides or fertilizer or whatever in large quantities. The sample letter, I think, was from Promontory. But Laughlin did give us a good reminder, making sure we're brushing and baling and cammering the wells and trying to collect as much data as we can to come up with a plan. And, you know, now we just need to figure out if there's a way to do it, if we collectively get rural water, AWWA, to make a statement on road salt. I don't know what the alternative.
We can't just go to UDOT and say quit using salt.
We could.
But doesn't, you know, I mean, I know more about salt than I probably should, but, you know, Summit County uses a product called Real Salt, which is actually more expensive, and it's local, and it has, you know, it's actually got like, almost like a sediment in it that, you know, and that's why when you see it, it's kind of reddish.
Yeah.
And, you know, so the salt here, you know, they actually use a better salt here than, you know, than the white salt that, is typically used in a lot of other places. So I find that that's interesting that even using a better, you know, at Promontory, we switched over to that better salt because, you know, we were finding all of our trees along the roadways were dying and things like that. And so this salt was supposed to be, safer.
Mm-hmm. And, do they not use that or do they use the same? I know Summit County uses the different salt.
I'm not sure. I don't know.
Yeah, I wonder if it's UDOT.
They use a lot of brine.
I was going to say,
because these are all interesting.
That reddish salt that has like the more, you know, organic-y kind of look.
Yeah.
It's just processed less. So it's, in my opinion, it's more sustainable. It's a better product from that perspective.
It's almost like a
and because of the other constituents, you're getting some friction out of those. You don't need as much salt.
Well, and you can also even see where it's been and, you know,
but it's the same chemical formula. You're just using a little bit less.
Huh.
So
the chlorides will still end up in the water, but both you guys' points, I mean, it's a really challenging issue from a source protection perspective. So I mean, I have to be realistic. I think one of the, maybe the most likely outcome is not really having much impact, you know, with UDOT and folks at that level because it is a public safety concern.
Maybe if they stop using salt today, take a look at that 15-year line.
I don't think any difference. But I think it's worth effort. You know, we still got to run it down. I mean, if we have continued TDS plans in some of these wells in the district, it could get eliminated from our source portfolio. So I think it's worth a shot, but it'll be challenging.
Certain. Question. Was Doug tracking specific capacity previously?
I never saw it though.
I thought he was.
Doug had really
a presentation on it at one point when I first started.
So I looked through a lot of Doug's stuff. He has some really impressive data sets. But the one thing that was generally missing is we had really good water level data over time, things of that nature. But the one thing was missing was flow coming out of the wells. So
okay.
You know, that flow rate component wasn't there for us to take this next step to evaluate this specific capacity. And that's actually one of the reasons why the effort was such a big lift on our end and took a matter of months and involved Mike and Chris's group to get that data to Laughlin to generate that new data set, including the flow rates.
Because it's a simple formula. Your thoughts
sure.
Had all the pieces.
Yep. And they're in the database and we had them. It was just a matter of
cool. Well, that's good.
Doing the data mining exercise. And then moving forward, you know, on an annual effort, when we do go through the concurrency process, now we're set up to much more efficiently look at that specific capacity on an annual basis instead of going through this, you know, year long effort to kind of differ. So that'll be another good improvement.
And then one other question. I read in there there's a TCE concern.
Yep, and that's
ethylene, which
that
is,
definitely goes back to the source protection bucket, right? And that's concerning as well. So yeah, we've had
you know, and is that coming from the auto body shop that's up here? Is it coming from
Diamond Rental, Home
anything
Depot,
back here?
Brothers? You've got a lot of suspects. But I think you've got some easy people to go talk to. But that, I mean, those concentrations aren't a problem, I guess, but they're really concerning because you should have zero.
Yeah.
There shouldn't be any in there.
And Ian's alluding to
there's a triumph doing that.
Because see, that was one that was on my list because I was like, what does PC mean?
They are
anything
with manufacturing.
You guys in your acronym.
Some sort of chlorinated salt.
They are.
They don't have engines
there. Yeah. They are locked down tight. We've had some leak issues and everything, and it's hard to get in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But again, worth the try.
Yeah, no, we will reach out. And Sam has, and I don't know how many letters you sent out a year ago.
Yeah, and we're on quarterly sampling. So all bald organics, actually, including TCE. So, yeah, we're keeping an eye on it. But yeah, it's concerning for us too. We're sitting at generally around 20%, 20, 25% of the maximum contaminant level set by the EPA. So that's not nothing.
Yeah. I mean, the ball's kind of in our court of power because Utah has a non-degradation policy with groundwater. So that TCE is coming from somewhere. Somebody's breaking the law.
Yeah. And it's on one of our federal wells in the entire district.
And that makes it even worse. Yeah. So.
Okay. Any other questions on the Laughlin well? We'll move on to Brian.
All right. We got a weak drink. Go to this year. This is what we ended up with this last year. 37 leaks total. If you zoomed in on Summit Park, 22 of those are from Summit Park.
Is that a cluster?
That is a cluster.
Is there a second word with that?
Delete the name Park out of Summit.
We had some pretty major events this year. You know, we had one of the July, we had 8 main breaks in Summit Park, all within 2 days. This last month we had 7 main breaks in Summit Park. The guys were out on Christmas Eve working on one of them, so it was a rough month last month. We just got done finishing one in Zermatt. It took them like 4 days to find that one.
So it was the second one on Zermatt.
Mm-hmm.
The second one on Upper Evergreen.
So those are this year.
Yeah, so what Caden said is these are actually associated with parcels. So unfortunately, when you click on it, there's actually 2 at that location. They happen to be 15 feet apart.
Yeah.
So it looks like one on the map, but it's really, there's 2.
Fixed one. We had another one a few days later, right in the guy's driveway.
And none of these breaks are on the sections that we've replaced the last couple of years with that money we did, like on Parkview.
No.
Yep. All that's holding good.
Yep.
So it's all the historic stuff that went in with the initial development.
Yep. Not bedded.
On bedrock.
Yes.
On bedrock. It's old fireway.
Because there was some stuff in the 90s when the tanks and wells went in that I was familiar with.
And we're starting to have problems with that stuff.
Right, that's coming up on 30 years old.
Yeah, we've had, we found out a lot of that pipe was direct tapped. Nobody used saddles, so some of those direct taps are corroding, splitting the pipe. But a lot of that ductile was just corroding. Even that stuff that was put in the 90s, it's kind of sad.
Yeah.
You dig it up, and it's pitted. And
was it bagged?
Huh?
Was it in a poly bag?
No.
Oh.
No. So we're just having, you know, a lot of the old stuff is just laid on bedrock. You dig it up, it's just jagged rock, no bedding at all, so it's just falling apart. So that's kind of the leak update for the last year. Moving on to the rest of the district, in distribution, we have approximately 1,435 hydrants, and the guys service 619 of those. We try to get to all of them every 3 years. So we're on track to do that. We do the private hydrants every year. There's, I don't know, 200 below or something. PRV stations is 127 sites, a total of 250 valves involved in those sites. We got to 68 valves this year. We try to get to all those sites every 5 years. So we're on track to do that. We had a pretty bad year on our whales. We had to replace four of them, repair four of them. We have 16 total in our district, so that's, you know, when you work on a well, it's just unexpected. So we put our well back in service in Silver Springs that had been out of service for about 15 years. And then out of our 26 tanks, we had five of them clean this last year. So we try to clean about five a year. That's kind of the AWWA recommendations every 5 years.
How do you clean the tank? Just completely drain it? Then?
No, we use a diver.
Wow. Okay. That's similar to one presentation a month or two ago.
Yeah, we had pictures.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, we use a service that's out of Vernal.
Fossil divers.
Fossil divers. Get in with the vacuum and...
You know, oh, is that... Because I was like, well, how would you get rid of the whatever?
The vacuum. It's kind of like cleaning the pool. They just go around and suck out the stuff on the bottom. But
yeah,
the big part is they go in and do a complete inspection of it.
They're the ones that helped us find the issues of the Silver Springs tank a few years ago with the roofs and the wall problems that we had. That we went back and dug out around the tank. Because of the vegetation, removed
yeah,
the vegetation.
They've got a huge problem with that.
So they've been very beneficial.
Yeah.
Yeah. I forgot about that
one. Yeah. State AWWA recommendations and, you know, offer advice on what to do. So, our community water tank that we had checked out this last year, it's an above ground still tank. It's rusting. It's concerning. So we're going to have those guys come back yearly and check it out just to see if it's getting worse and how quickly we've got to replace that one.
And as a reminder, that's the one directly next to the failed tank that Community Water had before we took them over. So it's it was a
precedent.
Yeah, in that same area. So.
How big is it?
It's like 240,000.
Yeah, I was going to say 240.
Yeah. The one that failed that was right next was like 400,000.
Yep.
So that's kind of the next one on the list. It's a little concerning. In Lost Canyon, they replaced the additional suction side valves, so all the pumps are having new suction side valves. And then moving forward, I believe this year we're going to try to do the discharge valves.
Yeah.
So that's a big project down there. At the treatment plant, we touched on the membrane pumps. We've ordered two out of the three. We've installed one. And the guys are currently working on installing the other one. Right now we're just going to leave the old one in there until it kind of dies, and then we'll just have it rebuilt. It's a smaller flow pump, so we'll just have two big flow pumps and a smaller flow pump. This last year we got a new chlorine generator plant. That was a big lift. The one that we put in is like twice the size, so if we ever have an expansion, that will help out with future expansion if needed. We installed two new chlorine analyzers at the plant. We did that to try to get rid of a location that's down the road. We're kind of still in the process of getting that up and running. We replaced two vessels of carbon out of four at the plant this last year. We painted the building for the plant. And they replaced the last two skid feed pumps on the skid, so all new skids, all the skids have new feed pumps. So that's a big improvement. Also at Lost Canyon, we had a successful picking this last year. We're doing that every year now. Finding out that it's quite beneficial because it's quite dirty. You know, a lot of mud comes out, so that's pretty interesting.
Is it just mud or is there any other kind of stuff?
Mud, silt.
Yeah.
You know, the way it comes out, it's interesting because it comes out, you know, light, and all of a sudden you get this blast of like dark mud and goes light. And so I was kind of a skeptic. I didn't think we needed to do it every year, but
as much as you see come out. Yeah.
Year over year. It's mud. And it just kind of blows my mind that we get that much in 1 year. You know, because we flow a lot of water with velocity. I didn't think we would get sediment in that pipe. Apparently we do. So it's beneficial. The guys at Lost Canyon, they replace all the motor oil and grease on all the motors. That's per manufacturer's recommendation. That's a yearly event that we're actually doing right now. Do it in the wintertime. And that involves, we have 73 pumps at 20 pump stations. So that's quite a job. This last year, we repaired 2 Lost Canyon pumps. That's kind of our goal, is to do 2 pump replacements every year. Our goal is to go through all of them down at Lost Canyon every 5 years. And we also have the pump station painted. That's about it.
Is that all?
That's it. So it came a long way, so I'll make sure.
What do you think that annual cost is for all that work?
All that? I don't know. What is the state of
the Yeah, I know. It's fine.
Distribution's budget is, you know, $3 million. Mm-hmm. So.
And then Lost Canyon.
Lost Canyon's another $1.5 million.
We share that with Park City.
Share some of that with Park City. I don't know. I mean, I could see that being $4 or $5 million. Easy.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, there's other costs in distribution, water lease fees and things like that we'd have to back out, but that's the biggest department, biggest crew.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then there's hard costs, you know, besides the personnel, you know, like the pumps and the membranes and the carbon, all that kind of. Yeah. That'd be interesting.
When you have to budget for all the unexpected, a lot of the, you know, the well goes down. It's just, we don't know what's going to go down.
You got to do it.
Yep.
And then we have reserves too. These things that we know we're going to
have. We've learned. I think we're pretty good about trying to predict failures and have the money for it. So
we are going to start to do. Costs have been about the same as a percentage of the overall budget year in and year out.
They're pretty consistent as a percentage of, as I was looking at, you know.
I'm not seeing an upward trend or anything.
Not particularly. More than what we'd expect.
Could be 40% of the budget though. We're at 10.
Yeah.
Million. That's a very significant effort.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because payroll out of that department. Yeah.
Buying water and delivering it. That should be our biggest line.
It doesn't get to taps for free, that's for sure.
Buying water.
And while Steve is talking, we might as well move on to
all right.
Financial reports.
Great meeting.
So I've got a preliminary, just 2022 and year-end results. Just starting to engage the auditor this year, send some confirmations, things like that. The year ended well, so you can see we planned on 2.8 million in net position change, net income. We ended at 4.3, so about 1.4 better, kind of a split between $700,000 is better in revenue and almost $800,000 better than budget and expenses. Revenue, we actually dropped down a little bit. So the revenue, with our budget amendments, things like that, we actually ended up above with retail water sales. If we hadn't done the drought rates, we would have been under by $800,000 to $1 million.
Wow.
We really made that much with the drought rates during the summer. So that was important. Development related collections, we ended up a little bit above. As you may recall, we'd originally budgeted 1.6 million for impact fees. We changed the budget because we didn't think we were going to get there. It's about 1.4. We ended up at 1.5. We had a big colony come in December and things like that. When you look at December's revenue, we were almost exactly on budget, $7,600 off. Kind of overrun residential, down on a couple of other areas, but overall pretty good prediction. Expenses, we ended up 7.9% below on cash expenditures, 6.7 overall. So that was good. We had savings in operations, non-operations, let's say, all the departments added together, kind of along those lines. Maybe we already have this number a little bit, Mike. Operations, maintenance, and repairs, the budget was $6.3 million for 2022, or that's what we spent, sorry. For administration, the budget was 1.6. So we were under here, 595, under on administration, $170,000. Depreciation was right on. Cash, when you look at year end 2021 to year end 2022, balance went up 1.12 million. December, we spent, as you all saw on that check register, a lot of money. And that's typical. We spend the 1.8 which we erase, and we spend about $2.5 million in pawn payments. So we always kind of gear up and then spend a lot of money in December. That's just how it works.
And the bond payments don't go through the check register.
They don't go through the check register. We fund those every week, to like a trustee, Zions as an escrow. Then they make the bond payments for us every month, I should say. Let's see, customer growth. So we ended at 288. Last year we were at 434. You know, so still higher than our 4-year average by quite a bit, but not near what we did in 2021. And they did slow significantly, as we've talked about before, once interest rates went up and everything like that. We saw growth really stagnate. Promontory, it's 79 units this year, which is again well above a 4-year average, but not what they did last year. When you look at impact fees, ended at 1.5, 4-year average 1.6, but that's kind of skewed by, I mean, 2021 just skewed everything, you know, with the 3.4 million in impact fees and things like that. As you, for this year, we budgeted 600,000. I'm very glad Karen talked me down from 700 to at least 600, because, we haven't collected much this month at all yet. So, and January is always slow. We always budget. We know it's going to be slow, but. Yeah, it'll be an interesting year as it plays out. Water consumption, we've added a category, a Utah Olympic Park now, to break that out from MRW customers. Probably the most important thing to look at is our own customers. If you look at the whole year, they dropped 15%, and you have to pile on that we had about 8% customer growth. So we had quite a bit of savings from our own customers to 1,668 acre feet versus 1,955 the previous year. Olympic Park was up. They're definitely taking more snow to make stuff. Promontory Golf was down because they really followed drought restrictions last year.
What are we expecting to see from Utah Olympic Park this year? I mean, it's snowing so much up there, they're probably not going to be.
They always kind of stop. They make snow November, December. They don't really make much usually in January, February.
But their December was down from prior years.
Yeah, mm-hmm. November was high. They December start, was down because they had
a whole new ski area up there. Yeah. It looks like they've got hiking in there for snowmaking.
So this year they were quite fortunate that it was Mother Nature provided a lot of that. But in future years, they could have really high usage in November, December.
And they are constructing a 2 million gallon
pond
that is not finished. So we'll probably see them use that next year.
Right behind the cooling
fountain bottom.
Yeah.
They are getting close to firing that up, by the way.
By the bottom of the chairlift.
Continue the story.
They have a chairlift.
Yes, the new chairlift.
Have they approached Mount Regional on their future plans and do they want to serve them long term?
We have had several discussions with them, talking about them drilling their own well, that they don't have water rights for. Just trying to educate them, but they have so many things going on that this always is gets pushed to the bottom until they need to turn the water on, and then it becomes a panic. So we did talk to them a couple months ago about delivering water because they were told from their provider they couldn't provide water. We're selling water to that company, so I don't know. But it ended up that they just received water from Summit. They paid us a wheeling charge. But we've talked about trying to figure out a long-term solution. We need for additional storage and things like that. And they're kind of hoping that if Dakota Pacific comes in, they can get Dakota Pacific to put in some infrastructure and storage they can ride off of. But I don't know where Dakota Pacific is at. That's going to happen or not.
Would new infrastructure help our pressure districts or anything in the distribution system?
Not really. It's kind of on an island down there, especially down by their proposed well locations.
Yeah.
Where Yeah, it's tough to find like a mutually beneficial arrangement.
But it's also the limitations of getting the water up the hill. I mean, there are constraints there that someone's going to have to invest.
That's a huge lift if you want to get it to the tank.
Yeah, it'd be on par with the biggest, you know, head discharges of like the, you know, similar like a Lost Canyon pump station type.
Wow.
Discharge pressure.
Okay. But right now, their plan is summer.
Their plan is summer, right?
That's where they're districted.
That's where they own shares in, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Thanks.
Interestingly enough, Park City came on strong second half of the year. They actually ended up higher than they've been historically. It'll be interesting to see what happens next year. As you may recall, we dropped the budget thinking that their plant would come on and we may not spend quite as much, but they definitely took a lot this year. And then the last column, when you can see, I've got, you know, basically billed or accounted for 5,405 acre feet. That's lower than any year you're seeing. And that was drought, conservation, all those kind of things. This number being lower helps, you know, source development not to be as fast. But if we rebound to like a 2020 year, then that really pushes that envelope on source development really quick. So this is kind of the number that Sam and I always have to kind of look at. How much are we really going to have to produce to meet the demands? Capital budget, we're finishing it up. Everything's done, getting in the last invoices, and I go through and then spread the labor on the different projects. If you looked in the packet, this is just a little more detail to those first things. If you want to see specific departments, you know, energy, technology, distribution, you can kind of see where some of the savings were and where some of the more specific revenue amounts were, impact fees, things like that. And lastly, a little more detail on the cash as well. But yeah, probably the biggest change from last year is when we took the regionalization fee fund and made the drought reserve and the regionalization out of that fund. Revenue kind of ended. So, and that's about it.
So not days in reserve now.
What was that?
Where are we at days in reserve now?
368. It was interesting. I was on a call. Well, not. I mean, Fitch did a webinar yesterday about credit concerns for the water sewer industry. One of the comments they made is that most water companies in the West are in a very strong cash position, and several of them actually have average of 600 days cash on hand. So we're not carrying an too large an amount compared to others kind of thing. So that was kind of an interesting data point.
The average was 600?
Yeah, for water companies in the West. So I don't know if a lot of them just have a lot of money on hand, a lot of cash. So too bad they can't buy any water with it.
Are we above or below the average size of a water company in the West?
I would say we're probably below. We're not a particularly large water company.
So we're going to start spending that cash.
Yeah. We've got a lot of projects that we're going to go through some of those reserves this year, which will be nice.
And remind me, what's our threshold, our minimum?
120, isn't it?
120 is our minimum. Yeah, that we have to at least maintain. Any questions, any thoughts? We'll have the final audit here in a couple of months. Kate will come up. That's my next point. In the packet, I just included her engagement letter. She only gave us a 2% rate increase, which I thought was very reasonable for the audit for this year.
Wow.
After they do it this year, the end of this year or sometime this year, we'll send out an RFP, have others bid. We've used them for 6 years, so we need time for us to go out. Doesn't mean we can't use them again, but we'll get others proposing and get proposals from others. So I'll sign this. It's just kind of standard or boilerplate language, but we've really been happy with their service. She knows our company really well, makes it really slick. So yeah, we'll break in a new one potentially in a year, but
or not.
We'll see. Because I think it becomes good for them too, because they don't have to go through the learning curve either. So we can both work through it real well together. So. All right, that's it for me.
Okay,
Lisa.
Thanks, Steve.
I have the recommendation, or I guess we need a consideration for the board to recommend a motion to the county council for the updated changes to board compensation and health insurance. They're the same changes we talked about at the last board meeting. with a slight modification you asked for to make it a little clearer about in the personnel section about the cost being at the board members' cost, not the district's cost for health insurance. Any changes or questions?
I had a note. There must be something in the main policy that said that employees are eligible for a fee in lieu of participation.
Mm-hmm.
And I would assume that's not going to apply to the board.
Yeah. This would, the only thing we're asking for here is for participation in, not a medical payment in lieu.
Yeah. Okay.
So increase in the stipend and then right. ability to participate.
So would that stipend come into play? Like if we went to an AWWA conference and there's compensation that comes back for a room or travel, does that go to that $5,000? Is that considered compensation?
Yes.
Again, no.
Not a, like, oh, if.
Like paying for the room?
So you're reimbursing for, like, if you paid for the room, we could reimburse him for the room, and that's outside of the $5,000. Right. But if we paid a fee to go to the conference, say we paid you $100, I think we say $100 okay. a day to go to the conference, that would count.
Okay.
That would count as compensation
mm-hmm.
per diem.
Mm-hmm.
But not
if we paid you to be there.
Oh,
not
the
okay.
But not for like a hotel room.
Okay,
or
sorry.
Meals or whatever. You guys are just have to share.
What about, or the registration fee?
Wait, that's just all the expenses.
mm-hmm.
Okay.
I think that we kind of put in the control board expense line item, not necessarily a reimbursement, not a payment to you for
like for this day. Dinner mm-hmm. tonight. It goes to.
So we have a control board line item in our public service that we book all of our control board expenses to, and we also we also put trainings there. If you were like a registration fee, mm-hmm. you mentioned
that's that kind independent of,
thing. Independent of this
of the. Compensation.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
And it goes into effect, well, if we recommend it
after the town council
approves it, which mm-hmm. is...
We have to get on the agenda. And I assume we would make it effective the following...
Whenever the policies, whenever they approve, then it would become effective.
Whenever we go into a quarter... We're going to switch to quarterly payment
mm-hmm.
as well. So
yeah.
First
so quarter. It would start. I don't.
Second
you know, if we can get on maybe. When we can get on the agenda, we can talk to them. But possibly this, you know, this quarter. So maybe it's effective on the second quarter.
Would it be subject to open enrollment or?
Oh, the health insurance.
Yeah.
If someone decides, then yeah. As soon as they become eligible, then it would become an eligibility issue, and I believe they could join at that time.
Okay.
But then probably.
But the compensation
yeah.
would be, you know, effective at the next
yeah,
board meeting, right?
Immediately. If they didn't join immediately, they'd have to wait probably for the next open enrollment, unless there was a life change event kind of type of stuff. So typical if you're a hot new hire.
Yeah. Yeah. So do we have any motion at this point or?
Yes, we would need a recommendation to propose these changes or a recommendation. How do you say that? a recommendation to recommend these updates to the Summit County Council for approval and incorporation into the district's bylaws and personnel policies.
So moved.
Okay.
There you go.
Thanks, Lisa.
Sure.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay, it's unanimous.
Okay.
And since I only had so much budgeted this year in that account, you may get some more home cooked meals.
Okay, well, if that's the trade-off.
You'll take it?
Yeah. Or maybe you put each of us in charge, you know, so.
A potluck.
Yeah.
The next one, we have two job description changes. One would be a new customer service water technician. And as I discussed in the background there,
everyone's well aware, we went through the operations side. The one we had left to work on was Anna's department. We have two water operators in there. Our one water operator, John, who's been with Anna for quite some time, is just promoted to backflow administrator. And then our remaining water operator left, resigned. So his last day is tomorrow. So we needed, this moved ahead a little bit quicker than I was anticipating, but we needed to put together a job description for that department, similar to what we've done for the distribution, treatment, and transmission. So we're calling this the customer service technician, water technician, and similar job description as really a distribution, similar pay grade to all those regular water technicians, just a little bit more of a focus on customer service here. And they'll be helping out with backflow. So we tailored that a bit, but similar to what our water operators do in distribution. So that is one. We will be, if approved tonight, we will begin advertising that internally first for 7 days to see if there's any interest in the district for someone to potentially move over into Anna's department. If we don't get any interest, then we would go externally to look for someone in that department. The second item I'm asking for on here is the customer service manager job description that was created in 2019 in anticipation of Marty retiring and moving on, and Anna kind of stepping into that more manager's role. As we revised the operation pay ranges and job descriptions last year, again, Anna's needed to move more in line with those other manager pay grades. So I've listed in there, we're recommending an increase from pay grade 17 to 19. It wouldn't have an impact on Anna's pay right now. It's just makes the higher end of her pay grade a little bit greater for the responsibilities. Anna has done an amazing job in that role, I have to say. Her department grew the most of any department with all of, obviously, all the growth we've seen. We have two water operators now. We have another customer service specialist. We've got backflow. I mean, Anna's really got a dynamic. We dealt with drought. I mean, she's all over the place. So I really appreciate all of Anna's dedication and hard work. So just wanted to recognize that. And those are the changes, unless there are any questions.
And we certainly appreciate all that you do for us, Anna, and, you know.
And her knowledge. She is always a wealth of knowledge for the history.
We want you to stay forever.
So both of these changes can just be approved by the board. They don't need to go to Summit County Council.
So motion for approval of pay grade changes to customer service manager job description and creation of the customer service water technician job description.
Okay. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay. It's unanimous.
Thank you.
Right.
I listen to a drought update call with the rest of some other state agencies every other week. And so we're early in the season. We've had a lot of snowfall. So I just wanted to give a brief, slide on where we're at. That black line where Chris is showing, that's where we are right now. This is our snow water equivalent in the Weber-Ogden basin. So you can see those little spaghetti strands going out are kind of the probabilities from today forward. The middle green there kind of being the most probable, but you can see we're in really good shape. It's good news. It's not, we're not out of this by any means, but this is definitely a step in the right direction. So, we were looking at these last year and we were basically that red line. So we were down below more into the yellow and then we flat lines, which we could still happen. We've still got some storms rolling in, but we're in a much better place than we were last year. So.
Are we going to send anything out to people not to rush on the great amount of snow that we've received? I mean, they certainly could serve. Are we planning on sending out something?
So we will be
continue our efforts with conservation, introducing the cash for grass and things like that. We feel like we can't, you know, rest on the snowpack that we have because we don't know if it's a once in 20 year event
right.
or whatever. So we will be communicating with our customers and building on what Lisa has worked on for the last year and a half. So.
And we'll be, you know, and you spoke with Darren on the phone today, I think, with Weber Basin,
mm-hmm.
but we'll be continuing to keep in close communications with them as we move forward. I don't know if he mentioned anything to you about restrictions or nothing, but we will continue to monitor that as we.
I mean, it's a hot topic at the legislature. We don't
know what's
going to come out of there. Weber Basin could come to us in, you know, 6 weeks and say, you know, plan on drought because the Salt Lake's not recovering. There's a lot of emphasis on the Salt Lake, and if the decision is to send more water there, it could have an impact on us. It's just too early to know. Just keep praying for snow.
Yeah, absolutely.
While you're in Florida, just think about it.
Yeah.
this another just quick, you know, while we say it's a step in the right direction, this was one of the slides from the presentation. This is the storage for the entire state. This is dating back to 2003. So those far columns to the left, 2003, you can see while we've had some ups and downs, we're no means, you know, back to where we were with storage even last year. We're lower than we were last year at this time on storage. So we still have a long way to go to build up those reservoirs. So we're, like we said, we're not out of this yet. And the next slide, I think, is just the drought monitor. Currently, it came out today. And while we're improving, most of the state is still under drought.
So Andy, on that topic about conservation, are we still going to pretty much mirror what Weber Basin is saying they're going to do? So as opposed to saying there's no water or conservation is necessary, are we just going to come in and say this is how much we're getting, so you have to conserve? Because, I think it's a clever way to fill up the Great Salt Lake, but we don't really have a compelling conservation need out there right now. I mean, from what the customers would see. So if we just say we're doing what Weber Basin is doing, I think that's a better message. Right?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say, you know, looking out at the snow pile behind us, that we're going to need to conserve this summer. But the snow could stop. It could get really warm. All of this could run off. And California is getting inundated with water, but they just can't capture it.
But I guess we're not taking an individual position.
No.
District, we're going to do what Weber Basin.
We're going to do what Weber Basin is doing. Park City, our message is aligned to what Park City is doing. You know, we're not going to be the outlier saying, you know, shut off your spigot, things like that.
Do you think they'll come out with a message that says what we're trying to do is fill up the Great Salt Lake, or do you think they're just going to say this is all the water you're going to get?
No, I think there's going to be a lot of messaging around the Salt Lake
and the
impact it'll have to the state and the impact if we don't do something, the financial impact. If we all collectively have to pay to mitigate dust and everything else, the ski resorts, I can't remember what it's called when the dust was on the snow, Albedo, right? The snowpack doesn't save because mm-hmm. That has a different solar right. impact. I think there's going to be a lot of messaging for a lot of different places.
Good. And the personal health effects, I mean, it's very well documented, the metals load that's at the base of the lake, that's all going to be aerialized and be blowing into our communities. So keeping those surfaces wet will dramatically keep all of our health. Yeah, much better.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of things that we could physically be paying if we don't address it health-wise.
That's all. Okay, thanks, Lisa.
Thanks, Lisa.
Andy.
So I sent everyone an email that I sent the district of the things that we're going to focus on for the next 12 months. One of the things, and if you have any questions on that, one of the things that happened, if you saw Chris's email, we lost a circuit breaker up at the treatment plant
2 weeks ago.
Yeah. Just a fluke. Just happens to be.
It wasn't power going out. That patch number just went up.
It just quit. And so, the initial word was, okay, you can replace it, but it's going to take you 8 months to get a circuit breaker. So we ran off a generator for a couple of days, or 2 days. Fortunately, we were able to secure one. Initially, we were told it was going to be a $30,000 replacement. We were able to secure one for $14,000. But that caused me to think of what are our other pinch points? What are our other single points of failure that could happen in the district that would cripple us? And so we're going to start having discussions next week of trying to identify. We're not going to be able to figure out every single thing, but what are the things that we can try to prepare for that will help mitigate things like that? If we had to run the treatment plant on diesel for any length of time, we're fortunate that it wasn't in the summer. What does that cause? What does that cost? What is the effort? So it's kind of a good thing that it happened to kind of trigger our thought process of what are the things that we're going to need to do as a district to prepare. You know, do we have the right people trained for things? Do we have the right parts? What is the cost going to be of having something sitting on a shelf? It may not happen for 20 years. It could happen twice in a week. We don't know. But supply chain has affected us. Age of the infrastructure is affecting us. So we're going to start going through that exercise. And then, of course, as the Jacob study comes out, as the Bowen-Collins study comes out, those will hopefully identify other issues that we'll need to plan for. So we have a lot going on. Brian's been tasked with scanning old maps, making sure that when we leave this building, we are not taking reams and reams and reams of paper. We're really wanting to digitize. Lisa's working on grandma. What we can keep or what we have to keep, what we can get rid of. So just trying to go through, we have a lot going on. And as the year goes, I'm sure there are going to be things that will be added to this list. So that's just an idea of where we are today and where we hope to get to by the end of the year.
Yeah, Andy, there's folks out there that can do like facilitated risk assessments because it's kind of hard to, you know, you got to go through there and come up with these events and then what's the probability and what's the severity if it happens and you kind of focus on it. But there's, you can get folks to do that.
Like doing an FMEA?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you go to like Jacobs or something like that or one of those kind of companies and tell them you want to do a risk assessment, I'm sure they got someone that can facilitate that because it's kind of a hard thing to do for you to run it and then also participate.
They work much better bringing in a third party. Yeah. And really support his recommendation.
Okay, good.
And they're usually really good at boring down and trying to find out stuff. It's just better if it's not run by someone at the top.
Yeah, and so we're going to take a stab at it next week, but that's a good recommendation. I mean, Brian has a lot of knowledge. Chris has a lot of knowledge, and I think trying to get someone educated too, but we will start and then hopefully, you know, we can look at a third party to do something that figure out what that cost is. But I think it's important for us to do that.
There's some independents that do that kind of work too. If you're interested,
yeah,
I can help.
That'd be great.
It's worth the effort.
No, I absolutely. Yeah,
it's always valued and valued exercises.
When we were at the CityWorks conference for the software that came, they had a big session about that. You know, the risk of it happening, the severity of when it does, and several consultants there were kind of pitching, you know, doing that. So that
the green, yellow, and red chart.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
We continue to move forward with CRSA on the design of our office. One of the things with our property, if you notice behind Tim, there is the colorful site plan, a topo map. There's been some discussion about the topography on various parcels. So collectively with the county, we're working on a mass excavation.
Just as a reminder, this is about parcel
right
here.
Yeah.
The high ground. Yep.
So are we high ground or low ground?
Yes.
Compared to everybody.
It depends on where we are. So we're trying to make sure. So the good news, bad news is we're working with the county to have excavation done. And because it's a larger contract, hopefully it'll end up saving us time. The bad news is we'll probably have to pay for it now. So that has kind of slowed us down just a little bit, just making sure we know what the elevations and the layout of the parcel are. We have a pretty much a standing call with CRSA weekly. They started showing us some example of buildings this morning. So we're going to work through that and go out and do some, and you know, field work and look at actual spaces to come up with a good design. The other thing is, there are three people that have put their names in for the board seats, Mike and two others. I think they're going to try to get this on the agenda for the 25th, but I have not seen anything, and I don't know if you've heard anything. It is on the 25th. So a week from yesterday.
Okay.
And if maybe if we're lucky enough, we can get on the agenda without personal bylaw. Just do it at the same time. So stay tuned with that.
You think it'll be in person?
I would think so. I don't. Maybe there's a Zoom option. I don't know. But if you haven't heard yet,
I haven't heard anything.
Stay tuned.
Okay.
But I will. I will attend that meeting. So unless there's any questions on what our priorities are for the year, I yield my time.
Mr. Thomas.
Mr. Thomas.
I don't have any.
You've got 5 minutes.
Oh. 40 grand.
Don't have any.
Okay, so nothing from Dave. Did anyone have any questions on the department updates?
I had a question as a tech one, that if we had a snowfall like we had this year and we had the array out on the pond, would it sink?
No.
Okay.
The pond's frozen. I mean, in reality, yeah, right now it's frozen. The array would be frozen in the ice and it would be anywhere.
But the panels still have a maximum snow load recommendation.
Yeah.
Somebody would probably have to go clean them off if it was over.
It just blows off up there.
Yeah.
So just a brief update, since you brought up the solar array, there's a question with Rocky Mountain Power whether or not we qualify for the Blue Sky grant.
Would it be a good fit without a battery additioning number, some sort of storage component? Which is, this is a new twist that just came up in the last few weeks.
But that's what kills it.
So we're trying to find out what the cost is for the battery. Does that qualify us? Does that make us eligible?
What size?
What size? And then the other thing too, I forgot to mention is, we toured the facilities with two of our newest counselors, Tanya and Canis. And Tanya mentioned that, you know, sustainability is a big thing. So, people shake down the council for some money.
An East Sider with, you know, it's a tree hugger. I love it.
Yeah. She's there and she's related to everyone on the East Side.
It was Lisa and Annie and I that did the tour, and I was pleasantly surprised by both new council members. I think it was a very good 2 hours spent for them. So.
They were pro of the effort.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Kenneth is really sharp.
Yeah,
really sharp. He used to be on the planning commission, and I can't say enough good about him.
Yeah,
he's really good.
Trying to get on the new county manager's calendar as well to do the same thing and just make an introduction.
He hasn't started yet, though, right?
No, he'll be at the retreat tomorrow, but he won't start till the 7th.
And also, they were very appreciative of us taking the time and reaching out to them. So it seemed good both ways.
Awesome. All right. Any questions on the timeline, or do we have a motion to adjourn?
Well, I have a few things. I'm going to be gone from the end of January to May. But I'll attend meetings via Zoom. I'll be in Florida. My boss told me I'm going to be in Florida.
Okay.
So I don't have a choice.
Okay.
Let me see if there's anything else. No, I think that's it. And if you need me, you can always give me by my cell phone.
Perfect.
So, but remember, this is a 2-hour difference. So don't call me at early.
We won't call you early. Don't call us early. We'll call you late.
That's all I have.
Okay, then I guess we stand adjourned at 8:23.